Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We got some heartbreak in the National Football League at the quarterback position. Literally. We'll get into that here coming up in just a couple of moments. It is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. He is Jeff Schwartz. I am Jonas Knox hanging out with you here. You can always check out the show on the iHeartRadio app, on all of our Fox Sports Radio affiliates, wherever you are. Good morning to you on a Thursday. And, yeah, we've got a bad NFL game we'll get into later on tonight. And we do it all live from the Geico Outkick Studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. Jeff Schwartz, what the hell is happening?
Oh, not much. You know, just getting ready for another weekend of football. It's already week 7 in the NFL.
I know, it's crazy.
It's wild. And college football, obviously, Big Ten is back this weekend. My conference, the Pac-12, will eventually play football at some point this year. College football just feels like odd, like not, it just, it's so disjointed, right? But the NFL is chugging along, man.
Yeah. I mean,
we've had some rescheduling and some moving around, but here we are, week 7. Everyone's on the docket to play so far this weekend, and it's pretty cool that we're almost at the halfway point. It feels odd.
You know what's bizarre? I was looking at the Michigan-Minnesota game. So that's sort of the, I guess you would call it the best matchup in the Big Ten this weekend. And temperatures are going to be in the 30s. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. This is week 1 and temps are already in the 30s, but it just goes to show you like the delay the fall weather, you can start to feel it. All right, you can start to feel it in the air and it feels more and more like football weather. So, it's nice we're getting all sorts of college football back. And then NFL, you mentioned, already into week 7, and we've got Eagles Giants coming up later on tonight. But unfortunately, we start off this hour, Jeff, with the team that's not playing in week 7. And that's noteworthy because since they're not playing in week 7, it gives them a little bit more time to go ahead and get their quarterback of the future ready to go. And that team would be the Miami Dolphins, who made the decision that they're going away from Ryan Fitzpatrick and they're going to make Tua Tagovailoa, the stud rookie out of Alabama, their starting quarterback after the bye week. No big deal. He just gets to deal with Aaron Donald and the Rams after that. But Ryan Fitzpatrick spoke yesterday with the media and shared some very candid thoughts.
My heart just hurt all day. It was heartbreaking for me. Flo kind of said what he said and said what he said to you guys as well. And that's the decision and the direction that the organization is going in. And obviously, you know, we've talked in the past, you know, how I'm the placeholder and this eventually was going to happen. No matter, it was just a matter of kind of when, not if. And it broke my heart yesterday. And, you know, it's a tough thing for me to hear and to now have to deal with. But, you know, I'm going to do my best with it.
So there's a heartbroken Ryan Fitzpatrick,
yeah.
Schwartz.
Very candid, right? Normally, yeah. When this happens, when you get benched, you're just, you know, it's best for the team, and I'm excited for Tua to play. And we saw when Tua finally got in the game this weekend for the first time, Fitz was like leading cheers, right? He wanted the crowd to get into it and cheer him on. And I understand a lot what Fitz is going through because, you know, he obviously at times in his career has been a placeholder. But most time they're not winning, and this team is 3-3 right now in an AFC East that you know, look like the Bills to win, and the Bills now have lost 2 games in a row and they haven't looked terribly good in those 2 games. The Patriots are not very good right now. I don't know, you know, Cam Newton is playing okay, but again, lack of weapons is really concerning, and they're just not scoring enough points. Defensively, the Patriots are doing okay, but you look at their offense. I mean, I don't know the last time I saw them with efficiency numbers in like the low 20s. It's pretty remarkable. So Fitz is like, look, we're 3-3. We got a playoff team possibly, playing really well. And then all of a sudden I get benched for the young kid who I'm sure that he's been helping mentor, but I don't think he thought he'd be benched when they were winning. I think he thought they'd be, you know, he was 1-5 or 2-4 and even 3-3, but they looked bad doing it. And it's disappointing for him. And also, I brought this up with Frank Isola earlier, and I think it's true. I need to double check, but according to, you know, to the websites that show his contract situation, he's due a lot of incentives, like millions of dollars, if he plays 50% of the snaps or 65% of the snaps. And he's probably upset that he's losing that money. And this might be motivated by money, because I looked at the schedule and I thought that Tua might play by about week 8 or 9, more like week 9, because
yeah.
I would say like after the Rams game. They play the Jets, I think, twice, and that's like Jets and then someone else and then Jets. Like, it just, the Rams is not the best game for him to start. And so I get why Fitz is pissed. A lot of veterans, like I said, will just say the company line, right? Oh, all right, yeah, I'm excited for the young kid. But he was honest, and I appreciate his honesty.
Well, and it's also, and he pointed out, this was the first time that it felt like it was my team, first time since Buffalo. And yeah, he's had those games to, I think it was a game at Kansas City where he threw 6 interceptions. So he's had bad games before, and it's always been known. But that's why it feels like there was a not a clear line of communication, because he even acknowledges, I knew this day was coming sooner or later, but clearly he didn't think it was happening now. And so that's why I wonder, when was the decision made? And the fact that he was cheering on Tua, I don't think he had any idea that this was going to be done now. I think he thought, man, if I keep winning games, you know, at least I'm going to hold on to this for another few weeks. And one of the thoughts that's out there that actually does make some sense is, because they had to move up the bye week, that maybe this was always the plan, that we were going to bring Tua in after the bye week. But the bye week was initially in week 11, and then with all the positive tests, they had to shuffle some things around, so they had to move it up 4 weeks. And so maybe that moved up the timeline for Tua. But still, man, like, his reaction sounds like a guy who wasn't fully aware of what the plan was, which is why he was so candid in that interview.
Yeah, when I was talking about their schedule, it was like it was supposed to be Jets by Jets. I think that's what it originally was. And that's when I thought Tua would kind of play that first Jets game, then have a bye, and then play the next Jets game. You know, I don't know if the players are owed a plan. Like, I don't know if the coaches should tell the players, like, hey, this is our plan. But I think they should sit him down and candidly speak with him about – and it's – the thing about it, it's really different now because of the Zoom meetings, right? Like, you're not in the facility. So he's not being told, like, in a face-to-face meeting in person, what the plan is. He's being told over Zoom, and it feels, and all of us are dealing with Zoom meetings now, you know, they don't feel very personal, right? Because you're through a computer screen. And so I'm sure he was a little bit hurt by just the fact that he was told over the internet, which, again, everyone's doing Zoom meetings now. It makes sense why they have to do them. But it's not how it normally works. Normally you get called in the office and you talk to the coach and you talk about it.
By the way, and sorry to interrupt, they might actually stop doing Zoom meetings after that Tubin story came out.
I don't know why. I'm not dressed very well right now, but I have pants on the least. I'm just, that story was, it's so interesting to me. Like I do a ton of Zooms. Obviously we all do a ton of Zooms now. And like, I just wear clothes. I don't wear great clothes. I don't wear, like, I'm not wearing a three-piece suit, but I at least have clothes on.
That video of the Charger security guard a couple of years ago. He's like, shuffling his own change, looking at the cheerleaders, and you're like, dude, what are you doing? Hey, there's like a stadium full of people at Qualcomm.
I don't understand. Like, did you just sit down naked?
Bizarre.
Like, I don't understand. And then just like you stood up and you're like, oh, whoopsie, everybody. Nobody wants to see that, Tubin. Nobody wants to see that. Okay.
But to your point, maybe that is so. Here's the only thing that I would maybe ask Brian Flores, because of all the quarterbacks that you could have in the NFL that would be understanding to an honest conversation about, here's why we're making this move and here's why we're doing this, it feels like Ryan Fitzpatrick would be the guy that you could be totally upfront and honest about. And his reaction doesn't seem like a guy who got an honest conversation from his head coach. Like, it really doesn't. He's been in this spot so many times. I've never heard Ryan Fitzpatrick talk like this. Never once.
Yeah, but I think the point you made is a really good point about the plan in his head for the general succession of this job, right? That basically he would at some point play terribly. And I get it. Look, he has turned into a pumpkin many times, right? He has done a great job, and then he just becomes Ryan Fitzpatrick. And where he throws four interceptions for two straight weeks and he gets benched. And he hadn't done that yet, right? And so I think that he knew it was coming when he played poorly. Okay, I have my two bad games. Here comes Tua. But they took him out in a big win this weekend to put Tua in. And, like, I just think he thought, I had more time. I think if he played two bad weekends of football, he'd be like, all right, this makes sense. But he's playing really well right now. And that's where the surprise comes from, is that, he was doing his job and he got benched while doing his job. And, again, the money plays a little part of this. I mean, obviously, if that is true, he would probably miss out on at least $1 million because he would not be able to get his 50% or 55%
point. I have those details for you, by the way. If you want those contract details, I have them here.
Yeah, so, I believe it's $1 million for 55%, right?
Yes, $1 million for 55%, 65% $2 million, 75% of the offensive snaps, he gets $2.5 million.
So, I mean, realistically, he was probably in line for that million, right? The first million. Because if that first bye week, if let's say he played week nine against the Jets, so, I mean, so 50%. So he's probably at least getting that. But the kicker, I believe, on the bottom of that is that if he was 50% plus the playoffs, he gets another million or 2 million. So there was a lot of opportunity for him to make more money. And he's made plenty of money in his career, but, you know, you always want more money. I don't know why you wouldn't. And it feels like this move could be made for those reasons as well, because the teams are petty like that, and they paid Tua all this money. Why would they want to pay Fitz even more money? So I could see where that was motivated, and maybe that's why he's so upset. This was motivated more for monetary reasons and a team being cheap than it was for performance reasons.
Yeah, it is. It's bizarre, man. And I don't want to say that it's apples to apples, because those were two different situations. But I think a lot of people forget, because Alex Smith and your brother was with the Chiefs when Alex was the quarterback, correct?
Yeah, he's Yeah.
So I think a lot of people forget, because of how good Patrick Mahomes is, Alex Smith that last year was in the MVP conversation.
Yeah, best year of his career. City.
He was unbelievable. Yeah. He was awesome. And so to see, and that's why it was such a bold move by Andy Reid to put all his faith in that young quarterback who had one start. It was week 17, didn't even throw a touchdown pass, but to put all his faith into that young quarterback, it was a really bold move, because you basically walked away from a guy who helped turn around the franchise. Yeah. The Chiefs were terrible before Alex Smith and Andy Reid got there. And then Alex Smith was part of the reason. He may not have won the playoff games and all that stuff, but he was phenomenal. And I think we lose sight of that. So here you've got Ryan Fitzpatrick playing pretty good football. They're finally winning games, an opportunity, a real legitimate threat to win that division, and he loses his gig before the half point of the season. It's a bummer.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned that, the Chiefs, because you could spin this in a way where, and look at, if you're a Dolphins fan, I'm sure they're excited for two, and they should be, of what the Chiefs did. So the Chiefs won Super Bowl because they took that risk, right, on dumping Alex Smith, and teams need to be aggressive as much as possible, in my opinion, in these situations, right? Because your window for winning is fairly small, right? It's just the way the NFL is. And look, the Chiefs are the best team in the NFL now, but they're not playing quite the same as they did last year. And there's other teams that have stepped up, right? Tampa, Pittsburgh, Tennessee. So, you know, you don't know year to year. Yeah. So you have to credit them. So maybe the Dolphins are looking at it like that. Like, okay, Tua's that much better than Fitz. We can bring him in and we can win a Super Bowl, which I think is unlikely. But, you know, they get ourselves in a better spot to win a Super Bowl next year, because Tua gets his reps now. But Alex Smith, by the way, did go to Washington and get paid. So he did. Oh, yeah. Like, he ended up I played with Alex. I was on Kansas City, Andy Reid's first season there. So I played with Alex as well. And Alex is a fabulous human. I'm glad he's come back. And they should give him the comeback player of the year award now and be done with it. So it's the Chiefs, though, and maybe the Dolphins are thinking like this. Hey, man, this is a bold move. We're in a spot to make this move. I will say, though, the offensive line, there's some concerns that they're 20th in pressures allowed and only first in sacks, which means that Ryan Fitzpatrick gets the ball out quickly and avoids those hits. And I hope Tua can do the same because obviously we want him to stay as healthy as possible. He hasn't taken a hit since he dislocated his hip. And so I think there's, you know, I hope that he's ready to go, and I'm excited to watch. I want to watch him play. I'll watch the game, obviously, against the Rams. Good luck to the Dolphins interior offensive line against Donald, who did not play well against the 49ers. For his standards, he's going to be angry. And so I'm excited to see that whole matchup.
I still can't get over the fact, and I talked about this recently on a show, I still can't get over the fact that an interior defensive lineman had 20 and a half sacks in a season.
And remember last year he started slow. He didn't have, I think he had like no sacks through a couple of weeks. He's the best player in his position relative to the rest of the position. Like does that make sense? So like Mahomes is the best quarterback, but there's also Russell Wilson, who's like 1B, and Aaron Rodgers, who's 1C.
He's unbelievable.
It's really incredible. He's built so low to the ground, and then you add in his power and his ability to get off blocks. I mean, like, I'm 6'7", 340. I never played against Aaron Donald, but like he would have killed me. I like playing guys like Ndamukong Suh, right? Just like big and strong, like run into me, please. Like I would love, but Aaron Donald would have gone under my path and taken me for a ride. I mean, he is so powerful for his size. I saw him at a Super Bowl Radio Row. I think it was in San Francisco. It was like 4 years ago, right? The Panthers Super Bowl, I think it was.
Yep.
And I asked someone, it was in the Sirius XM bullpen, and I was like, who's that guy over there? They're like, that's Aaron Donald. Like, that's not Aaron Donald. Come on. That's not Aaron Donald. I mean, like, it's like he's like 6 feet tall. Like, it's
6 feet.
And he was like, he looked like just like a ripped workout guy, right? Just like, I work out at the gym. He's wearing a tight white shirt. Like, I was like, who? This is the guy that's terrorizing the NFL. And I went back and watched the Niners Rams game just to watch how the Niners slowed him down a little bit. And you have to really design a game plan just completely with the idea of slowing him down. And it's tough to do.
Yeah, he's incredible. Before we get to break, who was the defensive lineman that when you went up against, you're like, I'm screwed? Like this.
Well, so the one who I had the most, the toughest time with was a guy named Corey Redding. He played for like 15 years. He was in the NFL for a long time. He had this one pass rush move that was called a push pull. And like he just had my number, man. Like I just didn't play well against him. He's always had my number.
Just that one move.
He was like, Corey was big too, 6'4", 310-ish. He just had me.
Wow. Well, you know what? You got me now. All right. So you say we've upgraded from that. So now we're no longer worried about that. Now you got chickens. Now you're a married man. Everything is going well. You don't have to worry about that guy anymore. He's not terrorizing you anymore.
Well, now you just brought up his name. I'm gonna go watch some more film on him to make sure I can block him next time.
Oh, name a chicken after him. That's the ultimate way to get even. Name a chicken after him. My wife
My wife has, I think, picked out the names of these chickens already. I don't know. Who knows?
God, you don't even get to pick the names.
And they're hens. They got to be. She wants to name them like old fashioned lady names.
So you're miserable. Oh, man. Jeff Schwartz, Jonas Knox, in for Clay Travis here on OutKick, the coverage here on Fox Sports Radio from the Geico OutKick Studios. Coming up next, there is a group of teams in the NFL, and one of them is going to do the improbable. Find out who we're talking about next here on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
Jeff Schwartz, Jonas Knox, in for Clay Travis here on FSR. You can always hang out with us here on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up in a little over 10 minutes from now here on Fox Sports Radio, somebody is close to making a potential return to the NFL. We will get into that here coming up a little over 10 minutes from now here on Fox Sports Radio. So, Jeff Schwartz, we were talking about how it's already week 7 in the NFL, which is bizarre. bizarre. The fact that, I mean, there was talk that we weren't even going to have a season, depending on who you listened to and who was out there with whatever agenda and political slant they had on things. And yet here we are, 7 weeks into the NFL. I missed Thursday night football last week. A couple of years ago, I was not in on Thursday night football, and now I love Thursday night football. And although we're getting Giants-Eagles, somebody's got to win that division. You know, somebody's got to come away with it with an NFC East crown. And so the first step to do so is to take care of matters in your division. And we get Giants-Eagles on Fox coming up at 8 Eastern time tonight. Come on.
Yes. Also, will distract us from something else possibly this evening as well. So I'm good with Thursday Night Football.
I think
we can never, ever complain about Thursday Night Football ever again because you're right. We missed it Thursday, and it was supposed to be Chiefs-Bills. No, it was going to be Chiefs-Bills, yeah, and then moved to Monday night. And so, look, I've gotten used to Thursday Night Football now. I don't care that it's a game tonight between two bad football teams. I mean, the Phillies like 31st in DVOA. The Giants are 30th. I mean, they're bad football teams. And somehow the Giants are getting 5 points, by the way, which seems like way too many points. But look, someone has to win that division. And we always joke about a 6-win division winner. Has that happened? I don't think it's happened before. I think 7.
Seven and nine.
I think scheduling wise, it's nearly impossible when you play enough division games to end up having that happen. But this year, I mean, this division is really atrocious. Look at the Giants, for example. The Giants this year, going into this year, I didn't buy the Giants. I never understood this Daniel Jones reboot with Jason Garrett, who is one of the most conservative play callers in all of football. We saw last year too, Dak and often started fast, and then it felt like Garrett took over. They went back to be conservative. And Frank Isola brought this up, and it's a point I've made about the Giants for this whole offseason, is who are their playmakers? Look at even Barkley. Take Barkley off it. I didn't think Barkley would have a good year anyways. But who are their playmakers on this team? Who on defense are you looking at and say, hey, man, that guy's going to make us a play? Who on offense? You're like, that guy's going to make us a play when it matters the most. They don't have any playmakers. They don't have talent. Their offensive line hasn't played well. And then the Eagles, who they played tonight, I think Carson Wentz is really good. But they just continue to have guys that drop the football. They can't stay healthy. His offensive line's all beat up. Their defense is okay sometimes when they're all healthy. And they can't catch a break either. And so one of these two teams has to win tonight. I lean toward the Giants covering, but the Eagles winning, just because I think Carson Wentz is that much better than is Daniel Jones.
Yeah, look, and Carson Wentz, and if you actually go back and watch Eagle, if anybody's actually, you know, tried to punish themselves and watch Eagles games over the past few weeks, at the end of that Bengals game where Doug Peterson played for the tie, which, by the way, I killed him for it, it might actually end up making a big difference in who wins this division. The fact that he played for a tie at home. I mean, it's a bad look against the Bengals.
Possibly it might end up working out, but do we choose process over results? Like, I don't really, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if the process was great to decide that, but I understand.
I agree. Yeah. If I were Carson Wentz or one of the players on that team, I'd be asking questions afterwards. I would say, What was the plan? Why are we playing for a tie? But if ultimately, if it ends up working out, then that's another conversation for another time. I look at the Carson Wentz, and I was talking about this earlier. This has got an Andrew Luck 2.0 feel to it because he's taken a beating.
Yeah.
He already hinted at, you know, when you suffer concussion, it makes you reevaluate. He's already had the other injuries to go along with it. I just wonder if at some point Carson Wentz is going to say, you know what, man, I got my money, I'm good. I don't need this. I have no help. Nobody can stay healthy. Remember when Alshon Jeffrey was like a premier wide receiver? When's the last time he played? Like, I don't know when he's played. Zach Ertz has been terrible this year. Now he's injured. Dallas Goedert's been banged up. I don't know if he's coming back tonight on a short week, but he's been banged up too. It's just a bad situation all the way around for Carson Wentz.
It is. And Carson Wentz is a very interesting evaluation because there are times he does look atrocious. Has nothing to do with who he's playing with. You know, early in the season, his footwork was really bad. And he made bad decisions with the football. He was inaccurate at crucial times. And then all of a sudden, you know, he just started playing better, but then his teammates let him down. It's one of those things, like, it's a cycle with Philly where it's like Wentz doesn't play very well, then all of a sudden he plays well, but his wide receivers don't play well, and then the defense gets hurt, and then this happens and that happens, and it's never, it never feels, with at least until like maybe last year, the last 4 weeks of the year, when they were winning football games with nobody, just Carson Wentz. It's the first time it felt like 2017 in a long time with Wentz at quarterback, right? Because we knew that in 2018, they went to the playoffs with Foles leading them back to the playoffs, right? The last part of that season when Wentz got hurt. So they're still waiting, at least I'm still waiting for him, so they are as well, waiting for that like complete offensive performance where everything is clicking, and it easily can. They just catch the football, right? I mean, like, it's last weekend, they dropped a lot of footballs, and they scored 57 points the last 2 weeks against really good defenses in the Steelers and Ravens. So they can put up points when everything is kind of going well, but just doesn't always go well.
I also wonder how liked he is by his teammates. That's the other part of this, because they loved Nick Foles. And yeah. I know a lot of those guys have moved on, but when Nick Foles came back, they were lighting candles in the locker room, and they were celebrating him. There was a clip that went viral last year to where Carson Wentz was knocked down and the offensive lineman didn't go help him up. And then there were reports that came out that he always went to Zach Ertz, and that was his guy, and didn't divvy up the passes. And the rumors were that was Alshon Jeffrey who had some of those comments. I just wonder if that's still resonating there in Philly.
Well, there are a lot of these whispers every year, right? Where, like, at some point it's like, well, maybe there's something to it, right? Because, you know, we're hearing, you know, every year there's something like, kind of Wentz is the thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I say this often, that when you're winning kind of deals with chemistry, and you can make the argument that you only win if you have good chemistry, and that's definitely true, right? That if you like each other, you play better. But I was on a 2-14 Panthers team. We liked each other plenty. We just weren't very good. It doesn't always. But I think that like when you start winning, those things that you don't like about each other, like it doesn't matter as much. Right? Like you find a way to make it work because you're winning. So a lot, like if they just were to win tonight, they'd feel great about each other. And like that's part of it too, is like you just winning, and I can't stress this enough, winning is the only thing that makes everyone happy in the building. So continuing to win, or trying to win, I should say, tonight, if they win tonight, like everyone will be like, oh yeah, Carson Wentz is the best. I love him. He's playing well. Good job. And so that's, it's a matter of winning to me. And I know we're talking about Antonio Brown in a little bit, going to Seattle possibly. Winning cures bad locker rooms. And again, you can make the argument, fair enough, that you can't win unless you have a good locker room, sure. But if they were to win a couple of games, all the stuff about Carson Wentz's leadership would just go out the door. Like, it wouldn't matter because you're winning. Everyone's happy.
Yeah, one of the things, I remember asking Brady Quinn this, because him and I do a show here on Fox, and I remember asking him just off the air, I said, hey, what do we get wrong as media the most? Like, what are we most wrong about? And he told me the locker room.
Yeah.
He goes, it's... You don't know the dynamic until you're actually in the locker room, and it's just a whole different world, and it's not relatable to anybody that hasn't been there before. You just don't know.
Yes.
You've never experienced it.
And I tell this to my wife all the time, because like we'll talk about her workplace. She's a nurse, and she runs the clinics and stuff, and just kind of like the way that a regular office functions versus an NFL locker room. And like people, it's not the same. Like it's just not. Like, people try to compare it to something else, and it's like, you can't. Like, you just, the amount of HR violations we'd have in the locker room, like, you just, it's just not, it's a different place. I mean, it's just, and so, and I think when players leave, it's tough for them to realize that, like, the locker room is so unique, right? Like, if you go to a different workplace, you can't act the same way. You can't say the same things. You
no.
can't. And it's difficult for players, I think, to understand that at first. It's just a different, and that's why it's so interesting to me how, when people get, to learn how the sausage is made, right? They get those, those videos that, teams take of the facility, or, Hard Knocks or anything like that. And people get so up in arms sometimes about the way players act in the locker room. And it's like, well, you asked for it. You wanted to see how it is. And this is how it is. And you can't, you asked to see how the sausage is made. Here you go.
I played high school football, and I look back at some of the stuff that happened in high school football, and I go, oh, my God. Like, I can't even imagine. I remember David Anderson, him and I went to the same high school, Thousand Oaks High School in Southern California.
Oh, yeah.
Dave played in the NFL for like 7 years for the Texans and for the then Washington football team. And Dave, I remember telling me a story that there was an offensive – he's all, this is how disgusting the NFL locker room is. He said an offensive lineman used to eat McDonald's while he was taking a dump. Like, literally sitting in the stall, eating a quarter pounder with cheese, taking a dump.
He goes, I will say, like, those stories, in my opinion, are, like, are very fun to tell. But, like, that's not, like – I hear people tell you – that's not as – like, that's not as – happens. It doesn't happen all the time like that.
No.
There's some grossness to it. Yeah,
like that. But that would never happen at your wife's hospital or a clinic.
No.
That would never happen. Like, you imagine, like, hey, where's Dr. Smith? Oh, he's got the Happy Meal and the quarter pounder. He's installed too. Like that would never. But in the end, but in football locker rooms, it's just different. It's a different place. And I can only imagine what it's like in the NFL.
It's unique. I don't think I've ever seen anyone ever eat a quarter pounder in the stall, but it wouldn't surprise me if anyone did put it like that. Like I would be like, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, totally.
It's funny. Jeff Schwartz, Jonas Knox in for Clay Travis here on Fox Sports Radio from the Geico Outkick Studios here on FSR. Coming up next, we could have a return to the NFL for a potential Hall of Famer. That's next.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
The other reason I'm here is because of college football.
Right.
I was telling one of your staff, in 1984, me and my dad were in a 400-square-foot apartment. The only people looking for me were college football coaches. Getting a college scholarship changed my entire life.
Wow.
That's why your help with getting Big Ten football back rang true to me and is important. People don't understand the importance of football and the opportunities it provides for guys like me.
Sandra, it's interesting. I love football, I've always liked it. I like sports. I mean, to be honest, I like sports. But football's so important in this country. And I actually went to an Alabama game. I never realized big-time college football, right? Big time. And an LSU game. And I saw something that I'd never seen even in the NFL. You know, in the NFL, I'll see 65,000 people. But I saw 120,000 people in the stadium. And it was so exciting. And I was president, and I went in, and it was LSU, Alabama. I mean, these great teams, great game, great everything. But I saw massive numbers of people with tremendous enthusiasm. I also liked it because they all liked me. I mean, the place went crazy. I mean, you know, maybe that had a little bit of an impact. But the fact is, that's big time. And they call it big time college football. I said, that is big time. It's the first time I'd ever seen that. And I thought it was great. So when I heard that Big Ten was out, and when I heard Pac-12, as you know, was out, I did that a little later. But I heard that. I said, we got to get them open. And I worked very hard for a very short period of time. Very focused. And I called the Commissioner Warren, who was terrific. He was great. And we got him thinking about it, and then we got him to do it. Did a lot of politics with governors and others because they have a lot of things to say about it. And we got Big Ten open, and we got Pac-12 open. And, you know, these are young people that have a shot at make the NFL, and that's maybe relatively few, but still. You know, you have some real, real talent in those leagues. And we gave them a shot, and I'm
guys
happy
like
about
me,
it.
I never got a sniff of the NFL, but getting onto a college campus changed my life.
Absolutely.
That was Jason Whitlock's sit down with President Trump. This is Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz, in for Clay Travis here on Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up 10 minutes from now here on Fox Sports Radio, we need to have a very honest conversation with a group of fans. And Jeff Schwartz and I are just the guys to do it. A brutally honest conversation with a group of fans. We will get into that here coming up 10 minutes from now on Fox Sports Radio. Hey, Jeff Schwartz, guess who's eligible to return after week 8 to the NFL? Your guy, Antonio Brown.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I was eligible to return. I was excited to make
you're always eligible.
Return.
Come on.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. I saw this yesterday, and I wasn't surprised, but still surprising. Seattle making a push for Antonio Brown. And let's talk about the one thing that everyone wants to talk about when this move is the locker room. Oh, my God, the locker room. And you mentioned this last segment, and I've said it many times, and I'll repeat it again. Seattle has a great locker room with a coach in Pete Carroll who I played against him when he was at USC. He recruited me first at USC. I played against him when he was there. I know players that played with him. I know players that played with him in Seattle. He has a strong culture going in that building, correct? Russell Wilson. Is a excellent football player, obviously. He's a leader. He is part of that culture. Bring Antonio Brown into a strong locker room culture when it's only 8 weeks to play and he's making a push to the playoffs to win a championship. He will fit in fine. He fit in fine in New England for a couple weeks before there were allegations and he ended up having to be put on the commissioner's exempt list and deal with that with the discipline process. So the locker room will be fine. They will be fine. He will be good for the half a season or even obviously into February. Now, what, sign him to a long-term contract? Probably not. But in the interim, Jonas, he's going to be fine. He will behave. He will be a good teammate. All that stuff's going to happen. He will be fine in Seattle.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it either. Also because I think he sees his own mortality flash before his eyes. And the stunt that he pulled with the Raiders when they were in, what did that cost him, like $30 million?
A lot of money, yeah. But he filed a grievance. I don't know if the process for that is, but a lot of money, yes.
Yeah, so he's cost himself a ton of money. He hasn't worked in a long, long time. I think he also realizes he can't screw this up. I mean, if he really wants another run at an NFL career, this is a tell to. And to your point, it's a good enough locker room to where teams will look at it and say, whoa, if he can't make it work there, I want nothing to do with this guy.
Yeah, there's a good example of that, too, with, like, Earl Thomas, right? He couldn't make it work in Seattle, couldn't make it work in Baltimore. And then people were like, I'm done. Like, I'm off of him, right? And yeah, I think he'll sign some maybe somewhere at some point. And this is Antonio Brown. This is his last chance to make it good. And I guess, again, I think he will make it good, right? Like, he won't get the ball maybe as much as Pittsburgh because they have DK Metcalf and he has other weapons that he's used in the past. But this makes Seattle even more dangerous on offense. They're number one right now in offense, in efficiency. This makes them scary, man. Like, who do you guard? Who do you set your defense to? Who do you roll the safety to? The big physical wide receiver who can run, or the other big physical wide receiver who can run?
it's
a terrifying if you get Antonio Brown by week 12 or 13 to play up to speed. Oh my God.
Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. You can always check out the show on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up next, though, Jeff Schwartz and I need to have a brutally honest conversation with a group of fans. They need to hear this. Unfortunately, they haven't heard it enough. We will get into that next here on Outkick the Coverage right here on Fox Sports Radio.